Thank you for coming. My name is David Pearson. I'm the AI services. What we do is, not familiar with Amazon services, where we offer things, it's really a building block, which is offered as primitives. And the AI stack is a series of layers from managed API services at the top right down to infrastructure at the bottom. And so it really gives different customers different entry points based on their needs or just their desires and their skills. I focus on the top layer, AI services. My team manages all of the three that we released. I'm not going to be talking too much about them so much as more about why we built them and the market that we saw and really the opportunity that we see, I think, in media and entertainment. So I'm going to talk about three areas. I'm going to extend to what I think is
with any of the other mics that are sitting in the chair.
Media metadata management. There's three big challenges. Getting all of the metadata, visual content is obviously incredibly rich, and AI has just progressed to the point now with deep learning and subsets. I thought to find it really well. AI with machine learning and then deep learning is a subset of that. It's really just different ways of building stuff. And what deep learning gives us these days is the ability to recognize what's in visual content, audio content, things like that. So we'll look at how that's applied to metadata management. We'll look at how we think about it in terms of audience engagement, and then talk about some lifelike speech with examples. So, speakers allow me. Mics are allowed. So in terms of the metadata, computer vision, what it's enabled is the ability really to do this sort of detection. Companies have been doing this for some time at great costs and great investment. And the science has been there. And what we focus on with the managed services that we provide at Amazon is the ability to really make that easy and accessible for everyone. Easy to use, never easy, but easy to use, easily accessible, cost affordable. And so anyone can really build these things. And that's really the point about providing the kind of the Lego blocks of cloud infrastructure is you give people the ability to build the applications they want to build, not be harnessed or constrained by technology or costs that are unnecessary. And so detecting objects, scenes, and concepts and images, estimating age range, gender emotion in faces, and recognizing the individuals, the images and video. So when we think about what computer vision can enable it just at its core content, its core deliverable, it gives us the ability to do to extract that metadata and then say, let's build an index. Index our metadata, sorry, our visual content, so we have this rich index of what's in it, whether it's people, faces, facial attributes, scenes, and objects. So we think a little bit about what that looks like. The idea and how it works is in managed services, it all gets trained for you. The process is the same whether you build it yourself or use an API service like ours. It's just who does the work. Really. And what happens in computer vision is there are thousands and thousands of, really hundreds of millions of concepts and labels that are trained by images. And these are recognizable. Supervised learning, and they're recognizable such that an unsupervised or a new image comes in, and familiarity, right? Humans can be familiar with something after a couple of views at it. The computer needs a few thousand of these, and generally a lot more than that. So we may get close to near human recognition in some areas, but certainly our processing, our human processing is way more efficient than this machine will. And so here you can see the sort of things that you can visually recognize, you can extract that from the visuals. This is metadata now, right? Visuals into text, and we have a confidence score, so you can then tune it to say, low confidence, let's throw it out, just speak for the high confidence stuff. On the face side, the general facial attributes, when an image of a face appears, what are the attributes about that face that you can detect? Age range, whether the person's smiling, facial hair, things like that. So these are things that are visually distinct. And again, computer vision is about that. It's saying, what is visually distinct? That which has more contrast, sharper edges, and easier to see, right? We know what that means intuitively, but that's kind of the hard definition for the science. Those things are easier to detect. And when they're not as easy on those scales, when you're looking at minute differences between things, the human eye obviously is the trained human being with human eyes always sees that. So this is where we are at this stage of production. But with you know, reasonable confidence now, we start to be able to extract useful metadata that allows us to build these rich indexes. Other points about the place. The landmarks, where things are. So the sort of use cases that you might use this for, obviously, you know, a lot of people who manage images have to crop the images to for different areas, you know, put them on the web, on mobile devices, and so on. Cropping it through a face is obviously a bad idea. And putting an ad across someone's face is generally not the best strategy for a click through. But face editing, pixelation, and being able to say, here is the face, let's normalize that person for whatever reason. There's also been we look at things like demographics, sentiment analysis, where we think about taking a large stream of data, touchless data gathering, by having a camera just take in the images and anonymously just capture, extract the sentiment and the demographic information, capture that at scale. And that's important too, by the way, because you will get, you know, deep learning nothing's ever 100%. But this is a game of probability, with the quality of the image, the lighting, and so on. And those, the things that you can control will obviously contribute to a better result. But there will always be anomalies. And so the idea for analysis, like any analysis, any big data pipeline, is get as much data as you can, because then the trends and the patterns are the things that will be significant, not the ones you do in the data points. And so this is an example of an architecture where you have just a camera's input taking the images, and it could be, say, behind a desk in a hotel. It could be an audience, looking at an audience, trying to gauge their reaction at different points during the show. And so just pouring that into a data store and then pushing that through a processing pipeline so you can detect the trends and patterns. Let me jump to this is my backup slide in case the demo didn't work. We'll see how that goes. Those labels and some attributes, like the gender and the emotion, and we've simply imaged one frame every second. And this is what our customers are doing. It's an image analysis service that we provide. But this is the sort of thing that you can apply to video immediately. And for recognition use cases, it works great. And so in this case, we've mocked up a little demo. It's actually an operating demo that's kind of alpha quality. Where all the labels that have been detected through those series of frames have been then put into a store, and we can highlight them, which I've done, and see them on the left-hand side of those labels. Now then you express that across a timeline, the timeline of the video, and then you get a sense of what appears when. So if this looks familiar to Amazon X-Ray, that's because conceptually it's the same sort of thing. What we have here, then we also highlight highlighting the emotions expressed on the faces of those present where detected. Audio on, audio off, a different thing. So this is a promotion for one of our public sector summits. I don't have great content here. We don't have access to the studio in the business. But what we see here is quite cool, right? We see the text. So here is the text, I've highlighted that. And now we have audience coming up. You can see the audience there is detected. Furniture. You can see the couch there, the sofa appears, and then architecture. See some architecture there, a little bit more here, and then some more architecture with blossoms. There we are. So these are the sort of things you can detect, and the idea is here when we highlight the faces of the image, and we can also overlay that with the sentiment, demographics and so on of the faces that we have that we've not shot to recognize. So that's the CEO of the US and the head of the Florida State. So that's why the age is up. I'm afraid that is. So, the other aspect, which is very interesting for computer vision, is going further down that path of faces, is to be able to do matching and identification. To say, I should know who this is, and then be able to build that into an index. And obviously, anyone with audiovisual aspects, if they're still for video, the idea is, of course, that you can build that index that refers to the location, the time, the frames, and everything within the asset itself, the film stock, the film library, so that you can now look up who is in what, where, and when, or you can say, in this asset, who appeared when. So you can do it both ways. How we think about, how we process the faces, this is kind of our processing pipeline. And I've selected a model here that I don't have any doubts about the price of the image. Young Jeff Bezos. Let's say medium Jeff Bezos. The first step is to detect the face, is to really say where is the face in the image. And then from there we go, we extract the landmarks and the features of the face, the attributes, I should say, of the face. And this is the point at which we can do the estimation of age, range, gender, all those attributes that we mentioned before. Feature extraction is another level. And this is a series of, within the convolutional neural networks, series of steps, phases that go through to basically discern different features of the individual. And what we're doing, we're basically taking a visual content of a face, we're modeling it to a template, and then we're saying where are the what are the visually distinct features? What are the features not visually distinct? What are the features of the face? A combination of which represents that individual. Now, when we say it represents the individual, it's not like you can look at this and say, that's Jeff. It's just a series of mathematical, it's an array of floats, actually. It's just stored in a high-dimensional space. The combination of all these things represents the face that we saw. So when you index a lot of faces into what we call a collection, which is where they're held, then these faces will exist next to each other. And so then you can start to discern person from individual face. And this is where we get photo recognition, verification, use cases, indexing, researching, once we have that data. So this is what C-SPAN is doing with their content. They're indexing this, they have almost 99,000 faces indexed, and then they've got their ability, they don't do it in real time, but they could, to recognize people on the screen, because now they're indexing all of their eight networks every few seconds, taking out an image, then saying who's in that, and then storing that in there. Other things you could do more interesting probably than C-SPAN, the same sort of thing that Amazon's already doing with the X-ray. This now becomes something that is pretty easy to do. With a collection of talent, then we can index their location in films such that we can then serve up a compelling second screen experience. When we talk a bit more about engagement, and really chatbots are an interesting part here. What a chatbot that enables you to do is do exchanges between humans and machines. Now, machines now could be representing a number of things. It could be a character bot that's written. It's becoming popular for me. But it could be way more practical. Maybe not as interesting, but employee conversations, offloading the cost of help desk support and spoken interactions between executives and enterprise information. What are the sales forecasts for next month? Those sort of things. We're moving to an intent-based structure now, where the conversation is like this. I'd like to book a flight to London. Sure, would you like to fly to Heathrow or Gatwick? Heathrow, please, and then boom, that's a data point that we lock in. Next day, when would you like to fly? Next Wednesday, we figure that out. Now, we decompose that. That's just a chat example. We look at it another way, and then we bring in some user preferences. Like a book of flight from London, there are different parts now that are being processed with that speech coming in. The speech recognition, to basically break it into words, then feeds the natural language understanding engine. The ability to say, what is the context of those words? What does it mean to the thing we're trying to do? And what it's doing is marrying what we think of as an intent. What is the intent of the building block of a conversation? And the intent consists of slots or parameters, just data that needs to be fulfilled. So in this case, origin, destination, and departure date. But also utterances. And this is the way you train a model. ability to have these engines off the shelf. You may have heard of Alexa, but these are shared engines with Alexa, and constantly evolving their understanding of the language as well. So now utterance becomes a series of 5 or 10 or 2 or 3 example questions of how you would invoke an intent, and that then builds a language model which the NLU marries from the incoming intent to the stored intent. The incoming utterance to the stored intent. So now it says, I know you're trying to look at flight. Great, let's go into that mode, ask you what else we need to know. Now notice that London was captured at the beginning. And we had user preferences here to say, okay, we know London, they want Heathrow, so we won't ask that. We've done a call to a backend system where we have data available where we can build that into the flow, so we're not having these dumbed down IDR experiences to saying, I'd like to book a flight to London, where would you like to fly to? Like, well, I just told you. You can avoid that. And not only can you avoid that, instead of asking Heathrow or Gatwick, you can say, well, I know you like Heathrow, so I'll make that assumption. So we're asking, when would you like to fly next Wednesday? Again, figuring out what next Wednesday is, it's putting it back to it and fulfilling that. The fulfillment now, the conversation goes on, but the fulfillment is now reversing with back-end systems to either do something, like book a flight or grab information, or just pass the control back to the application and have the application do that. This is kind of how the conversational bots looks under the covers. And in this case, we've turned from text earlier, now we've gone to speech. There's text to speech engine which then responds back. This is the sort of chatbot that we talk about character interaction with the NASA Mars rover built. And they, so if we think of how this might look. Now, but then there's more to it. What goes into the context, text processing. So if you look at that sense, you've got to get the abbreviations right. If you just read that straight, it would obviously not sound that way. In V and F. This is a tough one. The context here, live versus live. And so the ability now for the core engine, to solve that problem, not you have to program around it. That's an important advancement in human technology. Highly intelligible is it's always good to have a tongue twister, right? Comprehensibility. If you have the news reader coming far, you need to. Sure enough, you get an English accent. Speech synthesis markup language gives you the ability to do things like this. Process, say it slower and interpret it as a character. So I've got the word Kuklinski there, real name, proper name, and then I've got it again. I'm saying this is how you spell it, so we have to tell it and say it in a different way. And so these are important nuances where you can, with your text-to-speech engine, you can then make it more and more versatile, more and more accurate to the way that the output is, should be presented to the customer. You can also do pronunciation correction, so the ability to say, and again with proper names especially, K-A-G-A in Polish is not pronounced, not like that. All right. So what we have is the ability to say when we recognize this grapheme, and grapheme is just another word for it, text is input, and turn it into a phoneme using this guide, Kai-A, then we can, when it recognizes that, it can then reinterpret that. Ability to now belong to the product. We do all the training, we don't know what it looks like, and Alexa's wonderful and all that. So you need to build that, and you need to understand what it is, your utterances, your training, the language model. And if it misses, then the monitoring model, so we'll tell you whether it misses. We'll also train the most popular request for and things like that. So it gives you the ability to constantly fine-tune that model. Because until you release it and people start using it, it's theoretical. Like, this is exactly how it'll work. It's sure. Now launch it and request nothing like that. So it do give you the ability to catch those misses and then promote them in. But in real time, you'll have like an exception error handling function for basically kicking things out.
Just actually, it'll be eyeballs and everything.
Corporate box or something where you're like, give me some more beers. Like, I know who that would be very easy to tie together in multimedia personalization Okay, well, thank you for your time. I'll be around for a few moments.